from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, we have a couple stories from the recent North Pacific Council meeting and the governor's plan to sell more fish to Europe. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Who should profit from the Bering Sea and Aleutian Island crab fisheries? That was the big question at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting recently. Answering it generated more than 6 hours of public testimony and resulted in a vote that split the council. KUCB's Stephanie Joyce has more.
At the heart of the debate over who should reap the benefits of crabbing is a practice called quota leasing. Crab fishing used to be a race. There was a set amount that could be taken, and vessels competed to get as many pounds as possible before it all ran out. 6 years ago, fisheries managers switched over to a system that distributed shares of the harvest to vessel owners based on how much they had caught historically. For many owners, the share they received wasn't big enough to make fishing profitable. Others simply didn't want to be a part of the industry anymore. The result was a massive consolidation of the crab fleet. 230 boats fished Bristol Bay red king crab in 2001. This year, only 62 fished. But many of the owners who no longer have vessels that fish for crab still own crab shares. They lease those shares to active boats in exchange for part of the profits. Anecdotal evidence suggests that in some fisheries, like Bristol Bay, more than half of the total harvest is leased. Quota holders in that fishery charge boats up to 70% for the right to fish their shares. What that potentially means is that some quota holders receive large profits from their shares without assuming any of the risk of owning a vessel or actually catching crab. Councillor Sam Cotton described it as collecting rent when he asked crabber Tyler Schmiel whether the practice bothered him.
Do you care if the people that you lease your quota from are active in the fishery? Do you care if they live in Singapore and just do nothing but collect rents? Does it make any difference to you as part of your business? Does it offend you in any way as a matter of policy?
Schmiel said it didn't bother him, and so did crabber Brian Hayworth, who also testified.
To hear that owners of the boats are sitting on beaches in tropical location receiving checks that only most of us can ever dream of doesn't really faze me. It's, you know, good for them. They were truly the ones that took the financial risk of owning their boats, dealing with crews, dealing with the insurance companies before the IFQ programs. And, I mean, most of these guys, I mean, they pioneered the industry.
Other fishermen and some counselors felt very differently about who should benefit. Tom Surian is skipper of the Bristol Mariner. He testified that high lease rates take money out of crew members' pockets.
We know traditionally where we started before rationalization. There's tremendous data to show that. We know where we are now. And we also know that there's a trend downward over time, especially as more and more crab is leased and there's royalties assigned to that, that it seems to be coming out of the crew share.
Councillor Dan Hall said he didn't see any incentive for quota holders to ever sell their shares and let new people into the industry if they could just keep collecting returns.
The only reason that corporation might sell, as far as I can see, is that if the revenues earned from that quota would be less than what they could earn it by investing it in something else.
As it stands, the data on leasing and how it actually affects crew pay and quota turnover is scarce. A motion introduced by Fish and Game Commissioner Cora Campbell asks for more analysis of the issues. The motion, which passed by one vote, calls for the council to consider an active participation requirement for the fishery and commissions a study that examines lease rate caps, crew compensation, and quota sales. The council is expected to take up the issue again sometime next year. In Alaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
After salmon, pollock is Alaska's most valuable fishery. It's certainly the state's most productive one, with fishermen harvesting a couple billion pounds of the fish annually. But recently, the stock has seen some ups and downs. After a couple years of record low harvest limits, fishery managers raised this year's cap by half. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
This year, debate over the pollock quota was more heated than usual. The council ultimately went with the number offered by their science and statistical committee and capped the amount of pollock that fishermen can catch next year at 1.2 million metric tons. But not without internal disagreement from a third of its members and some strong dissent from a group that's usually absent at these meetings, fishermen. Here's Skipper Glenn Sullivan, who testified about what he saw on the grounds this year.
Safe to say I'm very uncomfortable being here. But I'm here because I'm deeply concerned with pollock stocks in the Bering Sea. And it's pretty, I think, unusual for a commercial fisherman to come to this setting and ask for a reduction in quota. But at the end of last bee season, I really felt that it was painfully obvious that we had taken too much fish.
Even though the 2012 quota is a little bit smaller than this year's, he wanted an even bigger cut. For the first time in 20 years, fishermen left over 100 million pounds of their allowable catch in the water. They also saw a spike in salmon bycatch, and they struggled with lower prices and high fuel costs. Mike Wiggins agreed that this year's conditions should factor into next year's management. He's a skipper on a catcher vessel, and he also ran a boat that was chartered for last year's National Marine Fisheries Service groundfish survey. In his testimony, he questioned the numbers that scientists were working with, saying that they got unusually lucky last year.
With the random sample, what you have is every tow you make is essentially the roll of the dice, and every once in a while you're going to get a Yahtzee. But what we did is we got quite a few Yahtzees back to back.
But fisheries biologists don't think that's the case. The model they use to assess the pollock stock factors in a lot of uncertainty, and the overfishing level is twice the size of the quota that they've set. Biologists have also suggested that fishing was harder this year not because the pollock weren't necessarily there, but because they may have been more spread out because of warmer bottom temperatures. Ultimately, with no hard scientific indicators to suggest that the stock assessment wasn't accurate, the majority of the council concluded that it would be a bad precedent to let a difficult season influence their management strategy. Dan Hull was one of those who voted against the motion to lower the quota. During questioning, he said that he valued the input offered by fishermen, but emphasized that management decisions need to be based on data.
I certainly acknowledge that we have leeway. We certainly have the prerogative to set tax according to, you know, or in response to ecological, social, and economic factors. But we have an obligation to respond to the best available scientific information.
While the fishermen who testified didn't get the quota they wanted, they did get people talking about how their voice should fit into the management process. NIMS biologists are already looking into whether it's possible to incorporate fishermen's observations into next year's stock assessment. They're now studying the changes in the amount of time fishermen are having to leave their nets in the water and how much fish they're harvesting for their effort. A survey about this year's pollock fishery was also recently sent to members of the fleet. In Unalaska, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Registration is now open for the 2012 Alaska Young Fishermen Summit, an opportunity for young fishermen or those new to the industry to learn about running a commercial fishing business. Sonny Rice is the Petersburg agent for the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program and said the conference is an excellent tool for fishermen trying to get their foot in the door.
It sprung out of an effort looking at how things have changed in the fishing industry and what tools a new person entering the industry needs to be successful. And we approach it from sort of the land-based side, so we're not teaching how to set hooks or nets or that kind of stuff.
Instead, Rice said the summit focuses on four aspects of the fishing industry that might not be known to someone who is just getting started.
We work on helping folks understand how Alaska seafood fits into the world marketplace for seafood as well as food. The second one is the basics of managing a fishing business and how that changed over time in the loans and all of these additional financial issues that people have to deal with now when they're getting into the fishery. So the third is a little bit of understanding the science and management of fisheries. We try to link up participants with managers and scientists who are looking at things that are going to impact their fisheries long term. And then the fourth is the regulatory process. So in the past, we've focused on the Board of Fish, how to get involved and put in proposals and such to the Board of Fish, as well as the North Pacific Fishery Management Council.
Rice said on top of that, the conference allows new fishermen a unique opportunity to network with others in the industry. This is the fourth time the conference has occurred. The first was in January 2007. Rice said originally they tried to encourage applicants under the age of 40, but this year they're opening up the registration process to anyone who wants to learn.
Anybody who thinks they could learn something in those areas is welcome to come. We're targeting on people that maybe are serious about fishing, but maybe are just getting started. So maybe they've been a deckhand for several years and they know they want to get in, or they've just bought their first permit or boat, and or they've been fishing for 10, 15 years or however long, but they want to start getting involved in the regulatory process. So any of those kind of things qualifies.
This year's summit will take place in Juneau, February 13th and 14th. Registration costs $100, and participants are responsible for their own travel. Rice said there are limited travel scholarships available, so she encourages people to apply early. You can learn more about the summit and register online at marineadvisory.org/YFS. Governor Parnell has touted opportunities and warned of challenges ahead for Alaska's seafood industry as it seeks to grow exports to Europe. Last month, Parnell returned from his first overseas trade mission as the state's top elected official. His first stop was London, where he and officials from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute visited retailers, producers, and chefs. The governor noted that consumers in the UK spend $30 million on Alaska seafood annually.
It's one of their best sellers in terms of the high end, because it is a high-priced good in that market. But if you look at our wild Alaska salmon on their shelves, it is that bright red color that we all know. Juxtapose that against their farm salmon, which is a very, very pale color. So they actually have their customers asking them whether our fish has been injected with red dye.
Parnell says Waitrose, one of the largest grocers in the U.S., has plans to expand into Turkey and Eastern Europe, meaning more potential sales for Alaska seafood in that region. But he warned the European debt crisis threatens to quash that growth.
They believe that if one of the countries in the EU defaults, cascading effect on the UK diminishes the value of their currency. That makes our seafood more expensive for them to buy, which means they will end up buying less of our seafood upon a default. That's just one example of how this translates back to Alaskans.
The governor also noted that Europeans are sensitive to overfishing, leading some consumers to buy farm fish. That's why he says it's important to keep marketing Alaska seafood as wild and sustainable. Parnell made his comments recently at the Juneau World Affairs Council.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
In July, Coastline Computers of Alaska won a bid from the Kodiak Harbor Master's Office to install wireless internet at Kodiak's harbors to service the fishermen. It was supposed to be available in St. Paul Harbor, downtown, in late July, but only just became available a few weeks ago. Eric Romero is the owner. He said the process definitely took longer than expected. The good news is that, for now, the service is free.
For now, it's just what we're doing is we're just getting it kind of ironed out, and then once we get the billing in place, it will be a charge.
While the service was meant specifically for the harbor, Romero says it's been accessible from various spots along Shelikov Street. He said people are more than welcome to use the service, and he looks for feedback on how it's working. He said he expects to start charging for the service in the next few weeks. The price has gone down from what it was originally.
We're thinking $14.99 a day. It's going to have a monthly fee of $49.99, weekly. We're kind of ironing that out.
Romero said buildings along Shelikov are more than welcome to pay for continued use of the internet. He said he hopes to install another access point that will face away from the harbor toward downtown, allowing various shops and taverns to use the wireless also.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KUCB's Stephanie Joyce and Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, KMXT's Brianna Gibbs, home on Christmas break in Kodiak, and KTOO's Casey Kelly in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, this is Jay Barrett wishing you a Merry Christmas.